Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories about things that work, but also my big epic fails, because I'm on this same journey. I interview experts and I ask questions about, what does this mean? What does this look like? For example, our last podcast episode was all about this overlap of project-based learning and social-emotional learning, and I interviewed two true experts on that subject. I actually have a new sketch video related to that. If you check out my YouTube channel, it is spencervideos.com. You'll see the sketch video that I collaborated with Mike Cackley and Matinga Ragatz. But I mention all of this because I truly believe that teachers are critical in helping students reach their creative potential. And often on this podcast, we talk about this notion of empowering students, giving them voice and choice, helping them to be self-directed in their learning. But today I want to talk about what that means for us as educators. See, I think there's a real value in encouraging and allowing and fostering moments where we as educators can own the learning as well. So that's what I want to talk about, different ways that we can own our own professional learning journey. And I want to start by telling like a brief little story right here. So imagine this. I'm sitting at a barbecue joint, putting finishing touches on a social studies pedagogy course that I'm teaching that actually starts this week where I work. And while I try to focus, I can't help but notice that the passion and excitement at the table across from me. Screw going on a cruise. I get to audit any class I want. I'm taking pottery, gender studies, history of film, and improv. Next semester, it's ornithology and rec sports, the woman says. She then shares key insights she's gathering from each course that she's taking. Some are conceptual, others are skill-based, but she is excited about all of them. I can't believe your version of retirement is more school, her friend says. Not really. There are no grades, no formal program. It's perfect, she says. Sounds to me like you're doing the freshman undeclared route decades too late, another friend says. She laughs and then says, it's never too late. I'm getting a degree in whatever the hell I feel like learning, and my CV will read, she never stopped learning until they put her in the grave. Now, this woman is my role model. This is how I want to spend my retirement someday. But the truth is, I don't want to wait for retirement. I can own my learning right now. While she's choosing the more structured option of auditing classes, something I someday want to do, this is what happens anytime we engage in creative work, or anytime you do a book study, when we explore new locations and travel and visit new locations in ways with an open mind, right? It's what happens when we listen to podcasts. We can choose the mantra, never stop learning, and make that our own CV. When we think about professional development, it's easy to imagine a conference or a workshop. However, professional development occurs anytime an educator continues to learn. We might not always get formal certificates or official credits for recertification, and that's kind of a bummer. But every time an educator learns something new, they broaden their worldview in ways that will help them connect with students, even if it's as simple as providing a new example to give in a class. They grow more empathetic with the productive struggle that students experience every time that they engage in creative work. They often learn unrelated skills that transfer into their teaching practice. Even when we choose to rest and find restoration in connecting with our loved ones or seeking out nature, our students benefit. That is itself professional development. After all, teacher care is student care. For this reason, I want to start with this idea of rest before we getting into other models of owning your professional development. So I want to start with this idea of rest. And this bigger question, what do you need right now? This year has been a marathon for teachers. For so many educators, this was supposed to be the year when things moved back to normal. Instead, they faced angry school board meetings and upset community members accusing them of indoctrination. They experienced challenging behaviors that they simply hadn't seen before, or at least not to that magnitude. Back in October, I asked a group of teachers to share some of the challenges that they faced, and here's what they said. Lack of soft skills in students, lack of engagement and participation among students, lack of substitute teachers, additional administrative tasks that they didn't have in the past, challenging student behaviors, demanding parents, too many new initiatives, an increase in emails that they had to answer. Indeed, I think we can say the teaching is a marathon. However, at the end of this marathon, there are different levels of tired. Some people are simply exhausted. They have crossed the finish line and they are placing their hands over their head with a mix of gratitude that it's over and a sense of pride that they are facing a huge challenge and that they have succeeded. These teachers are worn out and they need rest. But other teachers are injured. These teachers have finished the marathon, but they're hurting right now. They've experienced genuine injustice, and it has shaken them to the core. They face trauma, and they need to recover. These teachers need more than just rest. They need healing. I made a little continuum. There's a sketch video. You can find it at spencervideos.com, but it's this big idea of, are you tired or are you injured? Because if you are injured right now, you don't need a whole bunch of new professional development. You need recovery. You need something much, much bigger. You need healing in this moment. It's important that we recognize where we are in this continuum, but that we also recognize where our colleagues are as well. We all need the permission to be in our own journey, in a space of rest or recovery, and in some cases, restoration. If you are in a space where you need rest, you might be ready and even excited about professional learning. If you're in a place where you need restoration or rehabilitation, you might need to engage in professional development, but instead, you need to first engage in self-care. Every student is in a different place. Every teacher is in a different place. And you need to give yourself permission to be in that place. I can tell you right now that I got an opportunity to do several different types of professional development in the last 2 weeks. I've done keynotes in rural areas, in urban areas, big cities, small towns. I've done full-day workshops. I have people doing some of these self-paced courses that I put on. But I've also encouraged some people, especially some of the students who graduated from my cohort, to just rest for a while, to take some time off. And I think it's important that for some teachers right now, going to a conference, hearing a keynote, getting new ideas and feeling inspired, that is a great place to be. For some teachers, a deep dive into a full-day workshop or even a deep dive into a multi-day course is what they want, right? They're feeling a little bit tired. They need a little bit of rest, but they really just want to gain some new ideas and to learn something in a deep way. But again, some people, what you really need after a really hard year where you need this sense of rehabilitation might be to spend the time resting and talking to loved ones and hanging out and having a break from school and also going and seeing a counselor. I think it's important that we recognize that we are all in different places and that that is a good thing. It's, you know, we talk about differentiating learning for students, but we need the same thing for educators. Okay, so what does that actually look like? Well, right now, teachers all over the world are meeting in small groups, doing book studies to refine their practice. And without prompting from a district or a principal, they are taking ownership of their learning. They own their learning. Go to Twitter at any given moment. You'll see teachers wrestling with big ideas, engaging in deep discussions, thinking about how to transform their practice. Some of these are formal chats. Others are happening informally. But again, they own their learning. Meanwhile, teachers are making things from scratch. They're experimenting with new ideas, diving into the maker culture, building things that are entirely new. In some cases, they're not building stuff. They're building movements. They're making change. They're advocating. But again, they own their learning. Some teachers are reading books and blog posts. They're watching YouTube videos to get ideas. They're listening to podcasts and audiobooks. They own their learning. Many of these activities don't count as official professional development. They can't be used for recertification, but they are prime examples of what happens when educators own their learning. I will point out that in some cases they are being used and they are officially district sanctioned, and I love the fact that that is happening. Too often we think about professional development as a workshop or conference, but it's much, much bigger than this. Often we think about this transfer of, you go to a workshop, you gain these skills, you apply these skills, and then we see if they transfer into student learning outcomes. But I think that is way too narrow of a view. And I think that in many cases, professional learning is much, much messier than that. It's not something that can be done in a linear, systematic way. So I want to share 16 different ways that you can own your professional learning. So number one is a book study or book club. This enables people to make sense out of ideas in depth over time. And this can happen in an individual or a group setting. That's what I love. It could also be a podcast club where you listen to podcasts. Book clubs work well in a hybrid format where you can meet via Zoom, but you can also do it on a Facebook group or a Voxer chat. You can do online book clubs synchronously, asynchronously, or you can read a professional development book. You know, you get into some kind of book and you meet up at a pub or at a coffee shop and you just nerd out on your books together. I do have a whole blog post connected to this idea of ways that you can structure it, from loosely structured to tightly structured, from online to hybrid to in person. So you might want to check it out. Again, it's this idea of book clubs or book studies. The second idea is one of my favorites, and I think it's not used enough in education, but I love it. And it is the idea of a mastermind group. So a mastermind group is a close-knit group consisting of 4 to 6 people where every person has equal status. In other words, there is no leader of a mastermind group. Typically, the members are all working together. So they're doing projects together and they're meeting together for mutual accountability. Often they share their goals, their progress, their needs, and their ideas. So you might say, this is what I want to do. This is where I'm struggling. Help me problem solve this together. And it is fully democratic. It's a chance to share your success stories, but also share mistakes, frustrations, fears. It's one part encouragement group, one part support group, one part goal setting and problem solving group. It's all of the above. The group is solutions focused, meaning that you are actively seeking feedback and input. While some mastermind groups are unstructured, many use a specific hot seat or sweet seat structure to help facilitate discussions. And mastermind groups are a great way to own your professional learning by engaging in self-directed problem solving with a group of fellow educators. You can share lesson ideas, curriculum ideas, or strategies that you have been doing in your classroom. The third idea is a personal genius hour. I've written before about how summer is a great opportunity to make something awesome. It's a similar idea here. Genius hour is saying I'm going to spend 20% of my summer, right, doing something creative. So building something new, making something new. It doesn't have to be making or building. It could be learning a brand new skill. So you might learn a foreign language. You might learn how to play guitar. That would fit into Genius Hour. The key thing is what you are creating isn't for your classroom. So that's a little bit counterintuitive, but you're not creating it for your classroom. You're creating it for fun. You're creating stuff for yourself. The fourth idea is advocacy. We don't always think of advocacy as professional development, but when you actively engage in advocating for your students, you're changing the system of education. This advocacy work will give you firsthand knowledge of education policy, structures, and systems. It can help you grow as a systems thinker. And what you're doing is you're seeing the system side, the policy side, honestly, in some cases, the political side of education, and you're fighting for things you care about. Maybe you think there's too many standardized tests and too much time is spent on formal assessments, and so you're going to advocate for changes in policies around this. I think it's important to remember that education is not socially neutral, and the advocacy work can help you pay attention to injustices within the system. So, you know, I think it's really important to remember that this advocacy work is a critical part of your professional development. Number five, online courses and webinars. There are many different options for online courses. There might be self-paced, and these are often asynchronous if they're self-paced. They can also be scheduled and synchronous, right, where you're actually attending a live webinar, you're attending weekly courses. So there's a lot of different structures for it. They could be short webinars that you go to kind of get an overview of a topic for an hour, or they could be a deep dive multi-week course. Whatever it is, the goal is it's on your terms. So these are online courses. What I love about this is you can go deeper in some of these courses than you might be able to in a full day or 2 day workshop. Number six, rest and play. It's easy to forget this, but rest and self-care are a form of professional development, and so is play. In fact, some of the greatest ideas come from play. It's often where you have these aha moments, these insights. And it's easy for educators to feel guilty about downtime, but I would argue it's necessary for you, but it's also necessary for your students. Number seven, sharing your voice. Now, this is similar to advocacy, but this is more about sharing your stories, your journey, your resources. If advocacy is about fighting for justice and centering on students, this is idea of sharing your own experience as a professional educator. You might create a podcast, a blog, do a video series. And again, you're making and sharing materials in some cases, you're sharing stories. It's what I'm doing right here now, right? This is a form of professional development for me. Number eight is unconferences. An unconference is a fully democratic, unstructured conference. If you've ever been to an ed camp, for example, that's an unconference. You have no planned speakers, no keynotes. It's all spur of the moment. It's often done in a very Socratic style. And the goal is to, quote, vote with your feet. So you show up to the things you care about and you run with that. Number nine is action research. Now, in action research, you'll do a lot of this over the course of the school year, but you can still do this and plan out your action research over the summer. Teachers begin by exploring their own practice, asking a question. They take a deep dive into research. They read journal articles, books, blog posts, and then they come up with their strategy for collecting data. You'll then analyze the data and ask yourself, did this work? And that's what I love about action research. Number 10 is community. We grow professionally when we interact with the community. And I think it's important that we do this. We work informally, we connect with others, and this networking can expose us to new ideas. It's where you can have huge paradigm shifts. And I think it's really important that we recognize that learning happens in a community. So I would say number 10 is join a community. Number 11 is being a curator. Curation happens anytime you geek out on different topics, ideas, or strategies. I know many teachers who use Pinterest as a curation tool, for example. Others, collect various materials and resources that they put into Google Drive, and they share that with others. That sense of curation is a form of professional development because you're actively seeking out materials and ideas and new strategies, and you're collecting them and figuring out, how am I going to use this in my classroom? Number 12, listening to podcasts or audiobooks. I love podcasts and audiobooks because they provide professional development on the go. You can listen to a podcast in your car or while you're on a run. And while I love education podcasts, I think there's a real value in listening to podcasts in other domains. I for example, love 99% Invisible. It's a podcast that's all about creativity and design, and it often inspires me as an educator. Number 13, classroom walkthroughs. Now, you can't necessarily do this during the summer, but in some cases, you might be able to attend something like a summer school. And I think it's important to recognize that some of the best professional development occurs down the hall. And it's what happens when you observe others, when you take notes, when you pick up on new strategies and ideas. And so it's the notion of classroom walkthroughs and just learning by watching someone else. Number 14, curriculum design. Sometimes the best way to learn is by doing. You understand media and information when you engage in journalism. You become a better consumer of sports when you play a sport. And the same thing is true of art and music and food, all of the above. As teachers, we develop a deeper understanding of the skills and concepts we teach, as well as the craft of teaching when we engage in this act of doing, and in this case, by doing curriculum design. This might be individual endeavor where you're by yourself designing curriculum, making materials, you know, making slideshows for the next coming year, or looking at standards and picking them apart and kind of coming up with your own curriculum map. But it could also be something that you do collaboratively. You're meeting with people, you're all hanging out, and you're co-planning together. Number 15, mentoring. This is perhaps the most challenging to coordinate because of the time commitment, but mentoring is a really valuable way to engage in professional development. With a lot of new teachers who are going to be coming into the profession this upcoming year, your form over the summer might just be mentoring a new teacher, coupling them with goal setting, reflection, coaching, observing, sharing stories, and even later in the year, you might do some co-teaching. Number 16, goal setting. This is the idea of engaging in goals for the upcoming year, thinking about your goals for the upcoming year, thinking about what kind of data you're going to actually collect. Again, this is by no means an exhaustive list. I have likely omitted strategies that you will use as you take ownership of your professional learning. And notice too that a lot of these ideas overlap. You'll probably notice, for example, that I did not include the two most common forms of professional development, which is a workshop or a conference. I'm a huge fan of both, but I didn't include it here because a lot of those times, those are kind of what we automatically think of as PD. My goal here was introducing 16 kind of newer ideas that you might not necessarily think of ahead of time. But the goal ultimately is that professional learning should be something that you can own. Professional learning is inherently personal and idiosyncratic. Each person's journey is different, and that is okay. That's a good thing. The key thing is that we expand our idea of what professional learning can look like when we own the process. So I hope out of these 16 different ideas, there's something that you're thinking about where you're saying, hey, I think I could do that. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? And maybe recommend this podcast to another colleague. Word of mouth is one of the best ways to get this podcast into the hands of other people. Again, if you enjoy it, please let me know via a review or just telling others about it. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.